Welcome to End Time Talk Radio, where the truth is usually stranger than fiction. The purpose of these shows are not to scare you, but to prepare you, because what you don't know could hurt you. The word says in Hosea 4:6, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." Thank you for joining us. My name is Julie, and here is the host of the show, Barry Meyer.
Today on End Time Talk Radio, we'll be having Stan Dale. We'll be talking about The Cosmic Conspiracy, the final edition, 2010. This is a book that you'll definitely want to read. We'll be right back.
I got held up in the briars, and that's when I looked up and saw it. And it made no noise. The trees didn't move, or the leaves blew away. Ricky Soro, Stephen to the Lights. I went into sort of a shocked tailspin as I realized that the abductions were real. I said to myself, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," repeatedly for about 6 months. Dr. David Jacobs. They always communicated to me telepathically. An idea would come into my mind to go out and take pictures, or they would have me start drawing symbols, which was some type of language I had no knowledge of. They called it light language. The alien interviews is a hard-hitting exposé conducted with 17 people who have had direct contact with the so-called extraterrestrial presence. The alien interviews is now available in paperback for only $10. Get informed, as UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. Go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. And pick up your copy of The Alien Interviews, www.lamarzulli.net.
Welcome to End Time Talk Radio. Today we have a very special guest, Stan Dale. Stan, welcome to End Time Talk Radio.
Welcome, Stan.
Thank you, guys. Good to be here.
Well, Stan, this was really good to have you on. One of the things I really wanted to talk to you about was what's going on with I'll like to talk about your book here next maybe 15 minutes or so, but I wanted to basically also start off with what's going on with all these natural disasters. We are seeing so many things happen, anything from like fires, floods. Now we're seeing, you know, grain rises are rising. I just seen something in Colombia where now there's like dengue fever is hitting people. Stan, what do you see? What's going on? What's happening?
Well, it's kind of the times talked about by Daniel, the prophet, and other parts of the book in Matthew 24, or the Bible, rather. These are the end times. I'm convinced that we are at the end of this age, and attending the end of this age, Jesus told us to look for earthquakes in diverse places, to look for wars between nations and rumors of wars and all sorts of upsets to the environment and to the human civilization. So, I mean, my wife has even mentioned a number of things on the website in the last few days about the increased number of plane crashes. I mean, there's just a phenomenal number of planes that have crashed for various reasons. And some of them have had important political persons on it or whatever, but majority of them are just like passenger planes. And this, you can't blame it on any one thing, but these are just part of the breakdown of civilization due to unknown factors, according to the world anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, I see all this stuff as the birth pangs. In fact, the secular community on the radio says that these are earth changes, and I'm calling them birth changes because they're like birth pain.
Yes.
That's right.
We just see that in Colombia. They had that, what was it, a plane that got hit by lightning and split it in two or something? It's unprecedented.
Yeah, look, normally lightning doesn't bother planes. I mean, it might interrupt radio transmissions or something like that. But, I mean, my dad was a pilot during World War II, and, he had to fly through storms and lightning and whatever. And you'd have to be in a very unusual spot between two clouds that were having cloud-to-cloud lightning before it ever strike your plane. It's just highly irregular.
Yeah. Now, is that something that we're going to start seeing more? Do you think that if somebody's flying, we might see more of those crashes with lightning, do you think?
Well, I think we might see more aircraft crashes due to wind shear, either on takeoff or landing or near mountainous ranges, or even in some places they're just flat as a board. mainly due to upper atmospheric disturbances, which will drop down the jet stream down to ground level, or portions of it, so that it will put a 200, maybe 300 mile an hour wind in a channel right down on the Earth's surface somewhere, just right out of the blue sky. I mean, it didn't have to be cloudy for that to happen, and those kind of downdrafts can take a plane to rip it apart and throw it to the ground like it was, you know, a feather. See more of that.
And I did see that you had, I heard a radio show, you were talking about landicanes, and wasn't it South Dakota they had a huge storm that almost looked like a hurricane recently?
Sure. I've been saying that for a number of years, that what's going to happen with the increased temperatures from the sun is that our planet would heat up. And in the process, the distribution of the solar energy hitting the planet would come out in major weather and climate changes. Superstorms and super droughts, this sort of thing, super tidal waves, that sort of thing as well. And much more common will be these king waves, where wave peaks in the sea add together and form a super huge wave all of a sudden out of nothing and throw ships over or hit the coastline. And the landicanes are an example of that. Tornadoes are mini hurricanes, but we're talking about huge tornadoes, which are really hurricanes over land. And the only way they can sustain over land, you know, for a period of time, is to have a tremendous heat differential in them, which drives them. And when that happens, we're going to see landicanes, as I call them, over land for long periods of time, very destructive things.
Now, I've heard about HARP and also Project Bluebeam. Is that anything that might be affecting those things too?
Oh, to a degree, perhaps. I know that there have been a number of technologies for weather warfare since the early 70s that mankind has played with. And HARP is one of the later additions to the to the warehouse of war weapons for weather. But when you look at the strength of a hurricane, about all that HARP could do is take an existing one and kind of try to steer it more on a certain course.
Okay.
What people tend to forget, though, is that we aren't the only ones with HARP. China has it and Russia has it. And we're not asking permission from each other as to which one can have control of the weather right now. And so when you get two or three of them hitting weather control at the same time on the planet, you're going to get unpredicted results to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, do you think that the church is actually ready for what's coming down? Are they prepared?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
And I agree with you.
The majority of people are still sitting in comfortable pews, listening to rock bands or whatever, you know, on the guitars and having picnics and socials, and are not being fed what they need to be fed. Mm-hmm. They are starving for lack of knowledge from their pastors.
Yes.
This is a terrible time.
Do you think that they will be waking from their slumber, or will many still sleep as these changes happen?
I'm hoping for a second great revival on the mm-hmm. planet in the Christian churches. However, I don't at this point see what it's going to take to wake them up, short of what I mentioned in the book at the end of the latest edition of the book. You know, we have Christian friends who are in the sleepers, you know, and
yes.
you start talking about prophecy or getting prepared or looking up and, oh, look, you're not part of that rapture crowd mm-hmm. or you're not part of that survival, you know, conspiracy thing, you know, gosh, and they'll poo-poo it. So, what's it going to take? I think it's going to take a major circumstance mm-hmm. that is just so stunning and shocking that it shakes them to the core of their faith. And I think that's coming soon.
Well, you know, and about 3 years ago, God called us out of the sleepy church. And I really want to commend you and Ellie Marzulli and others that actually been speaking. And God has basically had our hearts leaded to listen to what you guys are saying. And we've learned so much from what the warnings that all of you were saying.
Mm-hmm. We have.
Yeah, well, we've all been corresponding with each other for many years, you know, sharing information we'd find for, you know, like for Lynn for some of his book material and stuff. It's just we're a very kind of small club, loosely formed, and share information back and forth and trying to figure out ways to get it to people so they can understand it and have a choice.
Yes. You know, and it is hard. Even people that are in the world, they have no clue to what's going on. They go home and, you know, order their pizza and watch TV, and it's just another day for them. And I just wonder, when is it, what it's going to take to wake them up? I don't understand sometimes their slumber, how they cannot see what's going on. Of course, if you look at local news and also national news, they tell you and they believe what's been told to them.
Oh, yeah. The news is totally controlled. That's one of the major ways, other than controlling money, to control the population is control the, you know, the newsletter that they get. Once you've got control of the media and the banking system, you've got them. People don't want to know a lot of things. They want to escape what they see in the newspaper and the news, what they do get, and watch TV or read a book or something. Some people still read and tune out. Mm-hmm. So you can understand that they're being conditioned like a herd of sheep to go to the gate that the programmers want them to go to. Mm-hmm. And again, this is prophesied by Jesus, and it's going to happen, sadly, and they will have to, many of them, go through the tribulation period because of that and wake up then. And I think we'll see great revivals in the underground church during that time. Mm-hmm. But, I sure wouldn't wish that on anybody.
For sure. Are you getting many people that are sending you emails on, they're getting like maybe rapture dreams that God is speaking to them about a rapture? Are you getting many people talking or writing to you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We don't put them all up. Holly puts up the ones that we sit and think about that are probably important or new information. I had one, I think we might have put it up on the website here a couple years ago, where, paraphrasing it, basically I was able to see a lot of people in the night heading out to a meeting place in the desert. Mm-hmm. And I was at a roadhouse with gasoline and food and stuff, you know, a little like a, you know, safe or a 7-Eleven type store. And it had a secret panel in the floor, which let me open up the panel, look down and see where those people were going. And it was like a big ruse to lead them to the Messiah in the desert. And Matthew 24, you see that, where it says, look, you know, if they say he's here in the desert, believe it not. They say, you know, come to him here or there, believe it not. Because when the true Messiah comes, it'll be like lightning stretching from the east to the west. You will have no trouble knowing that that's the King of Kings. And that phrase is something that we ought to just kind of burn in our brains and put it on banners on the cars, because that's going to be very important as soon as the deception really begins.
Stan, do you think that in the governments, those who control the governments above them now are actually more of the so-called space aliens, you know, they'd say the demonic realm, now are more controlled than of man?
Yes. Since the late 70s, the man-based technological research projects and development projects, mainly underground in tunnels or under the ocean or inside mountains, those have been compromised, and majority, if not all of them, have been closed down to human involvement, and the fallen ones, the fallen angels, have kicked mankind out. People call them aliens, you know, whatever you're comfortable with, but they've been here before we were, so I guess we're the kind of new kids on the block. But people have to understand the angelic conflict before they can rationalize the fact that we are being used in a virtual courtroom, which is Earth, to resolve a conflict in the heavens, third level, second level, whatever it is up there, between the God, the Creator, and the fallen angels who left their post down here when mankind was being formed and started breeding with us, as Genesis 6 talks about. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand that, then a lot of things like the inequity in life, you know, between the rich and the poor, you know, it just doesn't seem fair and all that. This is not meant to be fair. It's meant to be a courtroom resolution. And once it's over, those of us humans that have been created for this purpose, you know, the whole virtual human situation, mm-hmm. and have realized what it's about and have sided with the Messiah, you know, with God, the Creator, they will be given everlasting life from that point forward. They'll be taken out of the virtual reality, in essence, and given you know, an everlasting body that won't run down, won't die, and that kind of stuff. There'll be a lot of others who didn't see that in the virtual courtroom, and they won't appear. They'll be gone. But that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's the important thing, and people just do not want to try to relate current events to the kind of things you and I are talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, being that the angels had sinned, and now they're in everlasting chains, towards the end, are we going to see those demonic angels now come forth as we come to the very last days?
Well, I think so. I mean, good book says that there's going to be an angel's going to fall to earth, come to earth, and open up a doorway to the lower level, to Tahum, to the to hell, and to the place these beings are being chained and confined. And, you know, a lot of things are going to come out that aren't happy, and they're going to be hurting mankind in various forms. Mm-hmm. And I think these chained ones will be let out for that last great battle, and we'll get to Armageddon, and then, you know, the forces of the fallen ones, the aliens, will fight against God, I mean, against the Messiah, and we'll be there with him, and it'll close down, and they'll be chained up for that thousand-year period until they're let loose again.
Hmm. Well, now, Stan, you wrote a book, I got actually right in my hand right now, called The Cosmic Conspiracy, The Final Edition. What led you to write the book way back when, and now finally put the last edition to the book?
Well, back in 1977, when I first started writing it, I was doing so because I had been out of a secret organization. I guess most people refer to them as the Illuminati, but I'd been recruited and sent down to Australia to continue working on developing flying saucers and related technologies and energy and things like that. And that was in 1971 that I was recruited, and I left the organization in 1973 for a number of reasons, but foremost in my mind was when I saw what they were going to do with the technologies, withholding it from countries that needed it to feed people and give them water. I was upset by that, but I was also upset by the fact that my controller, Captain Sir John Williams, didn't like Jews and thought Jews were responsible for all the world's ills. And it dawned upon me they hadn't yet checked my credentials on my father's side that I was Jewish.
Oh,
mom.
And so I figured my days were kind of limited, and we parted ways, and they suggested I spend the rest of my time at the bottom of a 5,000-foot mine shaft there in Australia, and I got the message and ran. Mm-hmm. And I grew long hair and tied my hair back in a, you know, with a bandana and stuff, and traveled with hippies and disappeared off the radar for about 6 months before, you know, officialdom caught me. And by that time, I was clear across the other side of Australia and the west side, and I was being protected there by members of ASIO, which is the Australian Security and Intelligence Organization, because that state, West Australia, is much like Texas was many years back, and we all thought the same way in trying to fight this global, you know, government that is being set up under our noses without our permission. So when I was there, and I won't bore you with all the details, but one man was killed breaking into the ASIO headquarters trying to access my records. And CIA, an agent, did find me there in the desert before I got into town in Perth and let me go. And FBI was actually looking for me down there in Melbourne. And I knew before long that, you know, the chances were that they'd catch me and that would be it for Stanley. So I was encouraged to participate in a documentary television program in Perth in 1977, UFOs Are Here. And they had already started filming before they caught me, when they, you know, one of their producers heard me talking at a private party and invited me to appear on the show. And I told my testimony for about 20, 25 minutes at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be the highest rating television program it ever had. Wow. And people were absolutely stunned by what I talked about. And I figured, aha, well, this is interesting. And then I got approached by a publisher to, you know, have me write the book. And they were going to supply ghostwriters, so I didn't, you know, have to worry about being a writer, because I'm not really a professional writer. But mm-hmm. anyway, they messed around for 6 or 7 months, burned out 3 ghostwriters who just couldn't handle it. It was too hard, or whatever reason. That's what the company told me. I took my rights back for the book and started writing. And it was really a way to not only ensure kind of that I was going to tell a certain amount, not everything, but enough to hold the guys off my back that I would make the other known. And also at the same time to tell people the hope, the way out, and why this is all happening, and some of the technology so they could understand. And that was why I wrote the book back in 1977, mm-hmm. first edition. I've added in 1992 and 98, and then in this year, I've added chapters at the end of the book, but I never changed the first 200 pages except for editing errors. I wanted it to stay just like it was because it's tightly written. Messages are on certain pages. Like, I know on page 127 is an outreach for you to sign and be a believer and be saved. And, 127 is a special page. And you'll see that first 200 pages, virtually I can't do much with that without screwing up the coding in the book. Mm-hmm. But it was there for a reason, and I used biblical numerology to organize that. So anyway, there's 4 editions in that book. First, 92, 98, and then 2010, and it's a complete package. And, you know, people can get it now. I mean, like, I think I sell it for, what, $29.95. Mm-hmm. But out on the Internet, Amazon and people, big bookstores all over the planet, are selling it for upwards of $200, oh. You know, the secondhand copies. And that's not even all the editions. So you can tell that there's an interest there, which, you know, I was really spurred to go ahead and make this new edition. I wasn't going to do this anymore because I've done it for since 1978 when it was published.
Yeah.
And I was through until January this year, and I had a huge pressure in my spirit to reveal what I'd found in Daniel and to tell the church and the people that are going to be here, don't be fooled by the first lot of alien friends that arrive. It's going to be like the series V on TV. Do not be fooled, you know. Mm-hmm. They're here to consume you. And by golly, those eight verses in Daniel tell you that. No uncertain terms. And it's been sealed since the time of Daniel until I just stumbled upon a way to retranslate what has survived from Daniel's time in the book of Daniel. And those eight verses, when I use the Aramaic and Chaldean Aramaic and the Hebrew and the Arabic and some Sumerian terms from 1,000 years before, when I used all those in retranslating it in context, it tells a really spooky story.
Hmm. Can you elaborate on that in case someone wants?
Sure.
Okay. Can you?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 No problem. I broke it down into two groups of four verses, and the reason I did that was because those verses are each dealing with different aspects of what is about to happen in the great deception here. Mm-hmm. And the verses I picked were in Daniel, and there are more. These are just the ones I picked to talk about, are Daniel 2:41 through 44, and then Daniel 11:37 through 39:40, somewhere in there, 36 maybe, something like that. And it's in the book. But what I did was translate each word, each part of the word, and then give a discussion of why I did that and where I got the information from. And some of it took digging into ancient historical records that aren't widely known anywhere, mm-hmm. You know, about how a certain kind of clay pottery was made in Nabataean pottery was made in and found in, what's that stone city? Petra. And Daniel knew about this, and he referred to it as the clay of Tinah. Nobody, you know, they translated that clay of Tinah just clay. They didn't know what the heck he meant. And in those four verses, he sits there and he gives four different versions of the word clay, four different spellings. And those are important. And I think I still have more to dig out of that than I have. But when he said, the 10 toes of the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw, the nations of clay are going to be the clay of Tinah. And you think, well, okay. Well, there happens to be a place called Al-Tinah on the western side of ancient Babylon, and it was widely known for its fine clay. It could make it very thin but very strong, decorated pottery and stuff. And so Al-Tinah, the clay Al-Tinah, is clay of the Tinah mine, special kind of clay, only place you could find it. So when I broadened the thing with those historical things and put the references back to show where I got it and why, to explain more of the colloquial values of what Daniel was writing at the time. Remember, his first language is Hebrew as a teenager, mm-hmm. but then when he was captured and taken over to Babylon, well, he had to learn, you know, the language they spoke over there, and some of it was Chaldean Aramaic. Chaldee is a suburb or like a little county of Babylon. And he rose to great heights in power there through the grace of God, as did some of his fellow captives that were there from Israel. But they absorbed languages and words from all the people brought into Babylon, which is just a mishmash. It's like the United States, a mishmash of nations. Mm-hmm. So that's why it was so difficult, why it was sealed, until a time now when, you know, dummies like me could get a hold of a computer and an internet and start getting these pieces and put them together. You know, before they just weren't available. So anyway, I do encourage people to look at that, because those, especially those eight verses, are tremendously important, mm-hmm. to Christians and to Jewish people of this time. You know, Jews did not know or respect the fact that there was going to be a third part to the Trinity. There was God and there was the Holy Spirit, you know, the Ruach HaKodesh and Hashem, as they say in the synagogue, but they didn't have Moshanu, you know, our Messiah. And Daniel knew about it. It was there. It just wasn't widely, you know, talked about, except that there would be one coming someday. And to the Jewish women of Daniel's day and before that, to be the mother of that Messiah was the greatest honor a woman could have. And you'll find that there was a, there's a strange phrase. It's a beautiful phrase in what I put in the book, Al-Kal-El, where Daniel is talking about this imposter God that's coming to the earth. And he's going to put himself above all gods and the God of gods and the desire of women. Well, people think, okay, desire of woman, he's a queer or something. Uh-huh. But that's not it. That's not it at all. Those in that phrase, those and the way it was all structured grammatically, all three things had to be of equal kind of rank: gods, the God of gods, and the desire of women. And the desire of women was the desire of Hebrew women wanting to be the mother of the Messiah. And so, the desire of women was the Messiah. You see how it was coded in there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And until we could get all these things kind of pulled together into the Christian, you know, like basically the Gentile mindset, it was hard to explain that. But now we're there. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be looking for, you know, some homosexual guy that's in charge of the world at all.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at a guy that thinks he is so great, his ego is, you know, 10 stories tall. Gee, that reminds me of somebody else in the news.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We're right with you. Right with you.
Dear, you gotta laugh, guys. It's a terrible time, but you gotta laugh. It's too heavy otherwise.
Well, I think those who know Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior, it says in Daniel, those who know their God, you know, should do great exploits, and you know, we won't fear. But I think it's exciting what's happening. Stan, who knew that? Well, of course, I think some of us have known for a long time. You know, God's put it inside of us, known that we're the last people. You know, you just have that inner knowledge.
Yeah,
I would have to say since I've been when I was in third grade, I knew that I would never see 50 years old. And well, here I'm not 50 yet, but look at what we're seeing. It's happening so fast. Things are happening not by years or months, by days.
Oh, absolutely! I could not believe the rapidity of the way prophecy is being fulfilled this year. I'm just astounded at it. And you know, the good thing here, you may not reach 50 here. Uh-huh. But you'll reach a much older age there.
Yes.
And I know people kind of get into an argument about the rapture, pre-trib, or whatever.
Well, sure. And
I know that when Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of coming of man. Okay. In the days of Noah, everybody had warning out there, you know, believe it or not, and Noah's family and the others. And in the meantime, Noah was told, okay, build this ark. I'm going to put you into a safe place. And although, you know, flying saucers didn't come down, and as far as we know anyway, and put all those animals into his ark and then seal it up. We know the angels sealed it up from the outside. But he was put into a safe place, and all those who believed like him and his family. And then they were put into a safe place when the flood came.
Yes.
So before the danger came, they didn't have to endure it. They uh-huh. were put into a safe place. And I know that the believers, the church of this age, will also be put there before the judgments fall. Mm-hmm. Even though they're starting at the moment, but they're not anything heavy yet.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing how even God's spoken to us, and you know, and is that, you know, putting certain things in our hearts and already give us dreams too about what's coming down, like for like a rapture. And I think, like you said, you know, God is really speaking to those who are listening to what he's saying. And I think what's sad is many people aren't listening to what the Spirit's saying right now.
No, we're, you know, the community as a whole are being deluged with distractions, with problems they've got to solve, or, you know, with, okay, they're being distracted with business problems, financial problems, warfare problems. All these things are really on people's minds. They're trying to escape. Mm-hmm. And rather than sit and think about, well, what does all this mean? How does it fit into the biblical situation? All that kind of stuff. They're just blinded by this. I guess it's by fear,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not given to the spirit of fear once we're a believer and educated into what the Lord has taught us. So we aren't to be frightened. We are to be encouraged by the fact that it's about to all change and be over after the tribulation period.
Mm-hmm. Why have we crossed so many that are in denial? You know, they just don't think, yeah. You know, that we're even in the last days. They're like, you know, kind of poo-pooing it off, you know. It's like, oh no, that's not, you know, it's not as bad as you think, you know, you're just making mountain out of molehill, you know.
Well, yeah, they do that, but look, there's going to be a big wake-up call, and for those of us that are like, I guess, watchmen on the wall, mm-hmm. We've each had something happened that convinced us of this fact. And whether it's the logical mind or in the spirit, in your heart, we've had that awakening. I had a near-death experience for me that showed me that I lived outside this body and he's out there. And so for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to go home soon. We'll be through here.
Yeah.
So it's not a great drama, but we can't do that for everyone. Everyone else has got to have a crisis face them that is so just collapsing in its immensity that they will turn to God. And this economic thing that's coming this year, and possibly the alien help, you know, card being played, all these things will tear them from one pole to the other, back and forth, until the weak will subside. Subscribe to the Antichrist line, take the number, and be part of that. Whereas the strong will resist, but many of them will be killed for their faith. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that no one has to go through that. And maybe something will shock them enough that before the rapture, that they'll listen to what we've been trying to tell them, and they'll get airplay, and bang, they'll be saved.
There, it's amazing how many UFO sightings are popping up. I mean, it's not one a day. It's like, you know, like maybe it could be almost 100 in a day at times.
You know, Barry, that I have fought that issue with physicists at universities, gravitational physicists and theoretical physicists, most of them not believers. Uh-huh. And I remember one professor down at University of Western Australia that I was trying to explain how a craft, I didn't say saucer to start with, but I said how a craft could stand in one position overland, you know, for 10 minutes. He said, oh, no, you know, the fuel that you would require to do that, and he did the sum. And I said, well, yes, if you look at it that way. But I said, well, suppose I took a hot air balloon and filled it up over the top of that place for 10 minutes. You think it'd stay? Uh-huh. And he got mad, red in the face, and threw the chalk and walked out. You know, but I was using a simple example to explain a complex situation. The balloon of the hot air balloon encapsulates the lighter-than-air gas in it, which is very energetic. But the balloon is like a field. It contains stuff in it, like an electromagnetic field would do for a craft. And I was trying to explain to him that you can store a lot of energy in a craft gravitationally, electrogravitationally, so that it could stand there for months if it wanted to, because the energy expended would be very minimal. Mm-hmm. And anyway, many like that have debated the issue. And the one thing that I know will get the engineers who are disbelieving and the physicists who are disbelieving is this. You might see a flying saucer, 30-foot in diameter, 40-foot, whatever, flying. You might see a triangular Aurora craft come flying over, and you might say, well, that could be an alien. In fact, they do this on the news. It could be, you know, off-world, but it might also be an advanced research project of the government, you know, Russia, yeah. United States, whatever, because it's still in the size of things that we're accustomed to. However, if you look at a craft that's a mile in diameter exhibiting these characteristics over a city like Phoenix, you start to think, you know, that can't be from around here because we haven't got any mile diameter crafts. You know, how would they fly? I mean, and there'll be a lot of questions suddenly pop up that it must be possible. And this is going to take a lot of engineers and physicists right down. You know, it's going to break them of their, you know, ivy tower concepts of what is real and is not, and they'll suddenly realize they've been wrong for decades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that in your book, reading your book here, it talked about in page 243, you were talking about all these different movies and different TV shows like Star Trek and Alien and Battlestar Galactica. Do you believe that's all preparing us to receive this alien presence that will show up?
Well, whether it's intentional or not, it certainly is. And, yeah. You know, I think that writers are artists of a type, and they say they have their muses, which inspire them. And where this inspiration comes from is probably the source of all the deceptive plots that we're talking about in these various movies and series. But the one that really stands out is the V series.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That one there, I mean, with the powdered blood of the hybrid beings and being the thing that kills the aliens and gets rid of them. I mean, this is so much into biblical terminology and prophecy that, you know, what was it? Ken Johnson wrote that. Yeah. I've tried to contact him a couple of times because I just absolutely find it an astounding piece to talk to. When I want to talk to people, I'll put that movie up and I'll say, all right, let's watch this movie here. Now, movie's over. Look at what we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. This is in the Bible, and this is going to happen to you here very shortly. And that way they get a good movie and a bit of fun, and they get the message. Some do, some don't. But I've used that movie many a time in a private gathering to show people what I'm talking about and how things could go and will go.
And I was pretty young when the first V-series came out. It seemed like this one's a little bit different from the original one.
It is. The original one had more of the factors I'm talking about, but I've actually read Ken's book on the current series and where it's headed. And even these bad aliens, which in the V-series, the current one on TV, as bad as they are and they're doing all this stuff, there's going to be another set of aliens, the super aliens, who will come in, sneak into the Earth, and with the people will just use their powers and get rid of these bad aliens. Uh-huh. Now, that's kind of like the return of God and the good guys, you know, in the Bible. But he's left it in a secular term so that people would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, wow.
It almost sounded like he was a Christian in the background, just didn't want to – he wanted to kind of get – portrayed it. Like your book here, your book is set up to go places where it normally wouldn't go, into like a Christian bookstore and whatnot.
Oh, I know. They used to hide my book underneath the shelf in some of the Christian bookstores here, and you had to ask for it like it was, contraband or something. But
yeah,
I did that on purpose. I put that, you know, flying saucer stuff on the front, and that pyramid with the eye in that red rose and that crystal pyramid. Look, that cover took me weeks to design. Because it had to say a lot of things subliminally to the people who are unbelievers, who are in the New Age movement.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy it caught in a New Age bookstore in California was a Jewish fellow. And I know this because he rang me right after he'd read page 127 and signed it.
Oh.
And he said, I come from a line of rabbis on my father's side, and on my mother's side, a line of rabbis. And, you know, I'm the son of rabbis. And he said, very Jewish, obviously. And he said, I was in the New Age bookstore here in Los Angeles, and I picked up two books, your book and another one about, you know, our space brothers coming and all that. And I happened to thumb through yours first, just thumbing through, and my finger stopped on a page, and it said, they will come saying, we mean you know, peace and harmony, we mean you no harm, but don't believe it, they'll be imposters.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, well, that's interesting. And he closed that book, and then he opened up the New Age book he bought. And the very first thing it said in there was, we come in peace and mean you no harm. And he
oh.
said, the hair stood up in the back of my neck, and I sat down and I read your book from cover to cover. And he said, I am a believer. And after that, this guy, I followed him for a few years after he'd write me. He started speaking to thousands of people at lectures and over into Israel, witnessing there to the Jewish people. So one little thing like that got him, you see?
Yeah.
It's a hook and bait situation.
You know, Stan, one thing that my wife and I, we find out, there's people that we know that think we're crazy when we come to them, and we'll share with them about what's coming down, the best of our ability to express what we heard and what we read. But it's funny how God just confirms it. Like, he will – one lady we knew, my wife told her about it, and she was like, oh, this is, you know, this is that and hogwash. But my gosh, she sits down, and what happens on History Channel with Ancient Aliens and then something else. And then a pastor she knew, we had on interview, he wrote about Nephilim and stuff. And she's like, my gosh, I think God's trying to get my attention. Yeah.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. There'll be strange things. You'll be in a conversation with somebody, perhaps not even trying to be a witness, and you'll say something. And it'll mean something special to that person. Their eyes will open and the lights will go on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll start asking you questions and then it's your time to witness. But I reckon if you only witness to one person the right way when you're called upon in your whole life,
yeah,
you've done what you're supposed to, you know.
Yes.
Just always be ready.
Yeah.
It's wonderful time, I guess. Wonderful time.
Stan, may I ask you, now, have you always been a Christian your whole life?
No. Raised in a Christian home, even though we had Jewish food on Friday nights usually, but my mother was a Southern Baptist, and then she got dad to go to a Presbyterian church, and I did all the stuff and learned the catechisms and all that, and, you know, then I went off into the Air Force and drifted away,
uh-huh,
and it was when I was in Australia and being pursued in the desert, you know, escaping these guys, that I was sitting out in the front of my vehicle, I had the headlights on so I could read. Reading Revelation chapter 13, I think it was, because a little old white-haired lady had shoved a Bible in my hand when I was passing through Adelaide the night before,
oh,
and they were I got hornswoggled into attending a UFO meeting, you know, and discussing some of the things I'd done with computing and the numbering system. And this little old lady was in the audience, and she says, "You don't have time to read it now, but I've marked a spot. You just go read this when you get time." And when I was reading it out in the desert, I realized, you know, I'd wandered a long way from the faith. And I made my peace with the Lord there, and things really got interesting after that. Good, in a good way.
Sure.
But as I said, we were traveling with a band of hippies and their vans and all the little flowers drawn on it, and they smoked their dope and stuff. And so we were poor. And right after that, about a week later, we came into Western Australia out of the desert. And the first little town we hit, it was on a Sunday. And boy, we were hungry. Just we just had maybe enough money to get one sandwich. And I think it was like a dollar or something. And there were four of us that had to eat. So they sent me into this shop to see if I could, you know, get something we could eat. And I walked in, and there was nobody there at the counter. And right there on the counter next to the cashier was a fresh loaf of bread and a hunk of cheese.
Wow.
Oh, man, was I thinking, boy, can I? I said, hello. Nobody answered. I thought, oh, boy, I could just grab that. Nobody would ever know, you know. I thought, no, I won't do that. I'll see how much 75 cents I've got here will do. 75 cents or dollars of coins. And so the lady came out, and she said, can I help you? And I said, oh, yeah, look, how much of this cheese and that bread can I buy with this? And she says, oh, put your money away. Here, it's a gift.
Wow.
And I said, why are you doing that? And she says, well, because the Lord told me to.
Really?
And from that, yeah.
Wow.
So if the hair doesn't stand up in the back of your neck when that stuff happens, man, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
So anyway, we ate, and we had enough gas to get to Perth, and we had that in a can, you know, 55-gallon drum we were towing behind us, and so we made it there to some friends that they had, and we started earning money again, and at various jobs, and it, you know, I settled there, and was able to write the book and to witness to, well, I guess a few million people now since then, but it's. Yeah, I wasn't a believer until that time in the desert. I wasn't really born again, I guess I would say. And but boy, I certainly got my lessons that day. Mm.
Try to follow you on different shows that you are speaking on Power Hour or whatnot. And one of the ones I really liked what happened to you is when you actually had a gun and you fired it. You were in Dallas, Texas, and it went off and hit you in the back leg, and then you went to the hospital. And that thing with the nurse where she was rubbing that lotion on you, that was just an amazing story with what happened to you.
I know. I've often wondered if it was a nano robots or nano something she had in that cream, because it healed that leg so quickly. The doctor was astounded the next morning when he came in. I swear, she just disappeared. You know, we couldn't track her. The doctors couldn't find who it was. There was no one there to that description on the staff, never had been. So I guess that was an angel, and certainly thankful for that. Otherwise, I'd have been walking around like, a peg-leg pirate.
Well, you had mentioned earlier about the underground tunnels. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, for many years now, many decades, in the United States and Europe, they've had, and in Japan, they've had machines that would tunnel through solid rock about a 30-foot diameter hole so that you could, build bases underground in safe places. Now then, the latest public information shows the Germans have a 42-foot diameter drill head that will drill those things. Now, down at Los Alamos, one of the physicist engineers down there filed a patent for a nuclear-powered tunnel driller, so that it would take the heat of the nuclear reaction up at the cutting head and would melt the rock, even granite, would melt it, and part of it would go on a tray coming out the middle like they do now, but the rest of it would line the cave in thick glass or obsidian or something, whatever they were drilling through.
Wow.
And whether they've done that or not, I don't know, but we're talking about several miles a day they can do with these things, and perhaps even more. Some of them are so huge and heavy that if they wanted to drill a hole, say, down instead of across, they would have to take the whole thing apart and then put it together in the upright position before they could drill, because its own weight, if they turned it, would bend parts so they wouldn't work. That's how huge these things are.
That is big.
Wow. That's amazing.
Now, yeah, and in those things, I mean, you're talking 30 foot to 42 foot. That's 3 to 4 stories in diameter. And that's
so hard to believe.
Oh. You could you could fly a plane in that, you know? I mean, that's big.
Well, you know, in that sinkhole they had in Guatemala, that was 200 foot. That almost looked like it was drilled. That really did.
Oh, there have been a number of others like that. Looked the same way. And, you know, I don't have an explanation for it. I don't know why they would be so perfectly formed, but they are. They've had them in Florida, too.
Really? Yeah. You know, it's almost like those cartoon things where they just drill at the bottom and then they saw around and you drop through. And it's just, it almost seems unreal that that the hole was perfectly around.
Yeah. I can think maybe that local pressure of the sand or wet sand around that area or something might have, you know, uniform pressure in that. And if you drill up, it'll do that. But I can't see how just dropping water down, it's going to make a uniform circle drop, but maybe there's an explanation someday. I don't know.
Well, I know when I go in the mountains and I go by a creek doesn't go straight. It's always this way, that way, and so I can't see water. They said, I think they were said like there was like a leaky sewer pipe or something. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, that was the case. It would not go around in circles like that. So.
You wouldn't think so. As I say, I'm open to a discussion on that, but it is one of the things that has puzzled me. Because I couldn't figure out why anybody would dig a hole up like that, you know, man-made hole up underneath some poor project houses in Guatemala. I mean,
sure.
Why do that? Yeah. But it may have been done before mankind even, you know, inhabited that area. It might be just a remnant, a relic of some ancient age. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's why we have where the truth is usually stranger than fiction as our subtitle, because there's a lot of things out there that really are actually more true than what we thought would be as a fiction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to get funny looks. You go into, a dinner party with your kind of social friends, you know, that are not really believers, mm-hmm. and start talking, aliens are coming and flying saucers are going to land, and they'll put an aluminum foil hat on your head and send you out to the street somewhere. I mean, you know, they cannot relate to that. But we're looking at fact. It's stranger than, you know, fiction.
Yeah. Stan, have you heard of the thing called the Genesis Project?
Yes, I think I have. Refresh my mind.
That was something. Actually, matter of fact, I'm bringing that back to you when you had that End Time Roundtable with Doug Riggs and L.A. Marzulli. And I think that was brought up where Doug Riggs had those women that were Nephilim mothers.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay, yeah. Well, I've not pursued that any further since then. Not to say that I don't believe it, it's just I haven't had time. I've been kind of doing other things, other projects, but look, they crossbred with our women in the Genesis 6 account, and if it's like it was in the days of Noah, we are there, and they're crossbreeding with our women now to form hybrid beings to hold the spirits of a lot of the demonics that they're trying to bring into the earth. They need manpower here, and they're trying to do that and pollute the whole. In fact, when they crossbred with our women in Genesis 6, What happened was the women then had children who had children who had children, etc., and they had fallen angel DNA in them, which polluted them. They were no longer the DNA that God had created in the Garden of Eden for this virtual courtroom. And when it says Noah was perfect in all of his generations, if you retranslate that, it's perfect in his genetic makeup. He and his family, you know, those eight that were there, they were perfect and untainted. They came from a bloodline that was pure and not mixed with off-world beings or with the fallen ones. And that's why he was saved and the rest were killed. But yet, after the flood, and many civilizations, including the Hopi and those in South America and China, talk about the eight that survived the flood. Mm-hmm. But it was like the eight that survived the flood in a certain part of the world when that flood happened. But many others spot groups did survive. And after the flood happened, I mean, the Hopi tell about the swirling flood and how they were saved by God down inside of a cavern near the Grand Canyon somewhere. And, you know, each culture seems to have its story about that. But after the flood time, you'd have thought that all the offspring of Noah and any of the others that were perfect in their generation had survived, that there would be no more Nephilim, there would be no, you know, hybrid children from the aliens and human women. But they came back and did it again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of the flood, mm-hmm. and continued this to try to pollute the courtroom so much so that Satan would be found not guilty of the sedition he has against the against God, because the whole trial would be made invalid because of the bad DNA mix, and you know, you can't say this, you can't say that, and it was all an effort on Satan's part to absolutely wipe out the courtroom and win. Mm-hmm. And I explain that in the book, as you've probably seen, but I know it crosses and has crossed a lot of rabbis' eyes who tried to explain how the giants in the Old Testament reappeared on the other side of the flood, you know, like Og, a king of Bashan. And they tried to explain it by saying, well, we've taken the Hebrew letters that made up you know, part of the story of Noah's Ark in a phrase there, and we've got the number values of it, and that's the same number values as Og held on to the roof of Noah's Ark, and Noah fed him through the roof, and that's how they appeared on the other side. They just could not grasp how, you know, but it was because it was a reseeding. They came and did it again after the flood, and so the Bible tells you that, as it was in the days of Noah, they'll be coming back, and they're breeding with us, and creating all sorts of things.
Well, do you think, Stan, that they could be kind of tall, or do you think they'll look more like us?
Good question. I would think that they will probably be taller. Certainly, I've never seen one to my knowledge, but the reports that I got inside the organization was that their skin in sunlight was like slightly rainbowy, like an oil slick would be, you know, on the top. And that was because of very tiny scales on their skin, which again addresses the V series with the lizards inside human bodies, but and the serpent in the garden. I think they will be taller. They'll certainly be smart, and they'll probably be fairly good looking. Most of the true fallen ones, they're hybrids. I think it just depends on what gene pool they mix with, what comes out.
Well, and that's like that golden man that Ellie Mersley had talked to, that person named Herman. We know that person that actually met that person just out of the blue. I mean, their skin was transparent almost, like they looked like a perfectly body. Their head was different, but they basically said to them that, you know, because of current events in this world, it's time for me to become mortal. Like, well, who doesn't look at that twice?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the technology that they want to use to fight Jesus and his army. They're developing that in the tunnels and the underground bases, the hidden places we've got, you know, rapidly to make war against the King of Kings. Mm-hmm. They were cast down here, yes. Or they are being done. And I'm sure that they weren't being cast with a lot of the technology they needed, so they're going to have to scramble for it. And that's why they took over our bases after they got us to build them and started building whatever they're going to do. And I got to tell you, people that think they can drive up to a cave entrance or, you know, find an underground tunnel and they can go get to baddies or whatever and see where their bases are, or secret bases, no matter what, are wasting their time. Because in the early days, we learned that they had technology to go through solid walls. It's just a matter of polarizing the wall and your body, and your atoms pass right through without hurting.
Okay.
Between the average atom of anything, there's about 1,600 atom diameters of empty space. Mm-hmm. So when you line up all the atoms in a matrix electronically, you can then take another set of atoms all lined up your body, and you can pass right between it without touching anything, because there's 1,600 times the space, you know, of atom diameter between them. People don't realize that you can collapse most things down 1,600 times before they start to touch.
Really? I didn't know that.
And you can make a doorway to your craft, a metal doorway. You can put a strip inside of it around making the shape of the doorway, two strips, you know, separated by a very small gap. And you can cause the metal to actually cut or separate in that shape, and the door will open and, open out. And you can have a little spring loader on so it opens out. You can walk out of the craft and then have them close the door, then close the door and change the frequency on those two little strips. And it'll re-cement, you know, the atoms just like they were cast originally. And there'll be just a smooth metal surface there where the door was.
That just boggles my mind, because you just don't see that stuff, you know.
No.
I'm like thinking, whoa.
We still have gas-powered cars.
Yeah.
Of course, you hear about people inventing things, but then you wonder where the inventions went. That you always hear they're getting bought off or whatever, put away so they don't bring them out to help us.
Yeah. I want to tell you something in an overview picture of what's happening and been happening for, you know, quite a few years, probably a century or two. The Western nations, the Judeo-Christian nations, have been fighting the Crusades still since, you know, the whatever it was, 13th, 14th century. They've still been fighting the Crusades in the Middle East. And our guys on the Western side, by either our development or alien technology exchanges, have developed free energy electricity devices that are small and very efficient and non-polluting. Now, I wondered when I was in the organization why they didn't release this to the public. That was one of the things I argued with them about. And then it came to me while we were having lunch one day, the senior guy and I, that they wanted to burn up all the Arab Islamic oil fields. You consume them, right?
Yes.
Until they had nothing left but sand to negotiate with, and then our guys on our side with these new free energy devices would control the flow of energy for the power for the planet, and that would be true power, control of the flow of energy. That's what physics is as well. And that's, this whole thing is still based around the Crusades, and the Illuminists on the Western side are moving against the Islamic side, and they're leading lights, whoever they are, to try to dominate Islam and get rid of it. And yet we're losing now because, you know, the plan, the plot kind of changed when Satan's guys took over.
Yes.
Oh, I tell you what, it's it's mind-boggling. It really is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Stan, I won't keep you much longer, but Stan, is there anything that you want to share out of your heart to the people out there?
Well, I guess the main thing would be, other than get prepared for loss of banking and loss of, or increased food prices, loss of jobs, other than that, is do not be frightened. The Lord has certainly promised that believers are not given over to the spirit of fear. He will provide for us, even if it takes miracles of food appearing on your table out of the air. I don't care what it takes. He will provide for us. But in the meantime, you do what you can and let the Lord do the rest and be at peace with that.
Well, Stan, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Julie.
Our guest today was Stan Dale. We were talking about his book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, Final Edition, 2010. This is a must-read book. His website is standale.com. You're listening to EndTimeTalkRadio.com, where the truth is usually stranger than fiction. We'll see you next time.